Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, the New York Times has been under attack this week from the right-wing provocateur James O'Keefe, whose MO is getting people from what he perceives to be left-leaning institutions to expose bias. He secretly videotaped those Acorn housing activists, but several investigations found the tapes had been selectively edited and cleared the group of his corruption charges. Well, every day this week, O'Keefe has released so-called sting videos on Twitter, which purport to show New York Times employees violating their objectivity. Earlier this month, ESPN suspended commentator Jemele Hill for calling Donald Trump a white supremacist on Twitter. Last month, the New York Times' Glenn Thrush quit Twitter after opening yet another vile tweet. So where are we on media organizations and social media? NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik is here. And David, you remind us many organizations are reexamining social media. What are they doing?
Well, just in recent days, the New York Times issued what it called new social media guidelines. It's been in the works for a while. It's my understanding that it was perhaps hastened in some ways by the emergence of these James O'Keefe so-called sting videos. I got to say, a lot less there than hyped and a lot less there than meets the eye, but nonetheless a source of concern. And part of the deal was the Times was telling people, hey, you really do represent us on these platforms. You may think of it as a place to do stand-up. You may think of it as a place to get some edge, to get out, to vent some frustration, whether it be about corporate brands or particularly politicians and hypocrisies or seeming injustices. But you got to remember you represent the paper first and foremost. Wall Street Journal also came forward with a memo just in the last 24 hours telling people, hey, you're spending too much time on Twitter. We're thinking about this stuff too much. Let's cut back. Let's remember where you're first charges.
Well, staying with James O'Keefe, full disclosure, he released a video of the NPR Foundation president Ron Schiller back in 2011. In it, Schiller speaks negatively about Tea Party members when speaking to O'Keefe's activists posing as a Muslim group. Now, as you reported at the time, even Glenn Beck's website had questions about the editing. Schiller was actually quoting Republicans who were critical of Tea Party members. That part was edited out. But it didn't matter because Schiller ultimately voiced his agreement with them. He resigned. NPR's then CEO, Vivian Schiller, no relation, resigned. I'm just wondering, isn't it a good thing in a funny way, even though this was false editing, that NPR can then remind people it doesn't matter where you are, even if you're off air, you can't voice an opinion?
I don't think we need somebody as disingenuous and as intellectually dishonest as James O'Keefe to somehow remind us of first principles. And the first principles are those of fair-mindedness and of journalistic curiosity and open inquiry and fair-mindedness to your sources, to the subject of your stories, and also to your audiences and trying to explain things in a fair-minded way. You know, James O'Keefe has said on tearing down institutions, trying to tar ones that are activists as illegitimate, trying to tar ones that are journalistic as advocacy groups, and really it's part of his own fundraising campaign. You see it in his own videos. I don't want to give him any credence for what he's doing. I do think that we're in an age where people online find their every 140 character tweet, every Instagram posting reviewed often by critics on a lot of sides, particularly from the right when it comes to the media, to look at questions of legitimacy, look at questions of whether bias can be imputed. And I think that that's a part very much when you see so much criticism coming from the White House and particularly from the president about the attacking the integrity and the standing of the press, that that's the climate in which a lot of this stuff occurs.
But it gets confusing because reporters, employees, fundraising arms maybe shouldn't be, voicing their opinions. But Jemele Hill was a commentator. And so, some people, that's their job.
Well, I think Jemele Hill of ESPN got in trouble with the network in part because she was voicing strong thoughts about race and society on a platform that wasn't the platform she was being paid to do that. That is, ESPN seemed to be fine with her doing that as part of her show, what's called SportsCenter 6, but not fine with her doing it on what's sort of a private – or her personal outlet and sort of not. Here's the real problem in some ways. News organizations have actually been pushing their journalists to be more present online, to engage more with listeners, readers, and viewers, to be more authentic, to speak more in their own voices and less in the stilted voices of formal newspaper prose. And yet at the same time, they get anxious about the consequences. And the real tension in some ways is that some audiences say this is biased to know where you're coming from. And other, particularly younger members of audiences are saying, if you're not your authentic self with us, we're not going to trust you. And news organizations have pressured journalists to be out there and then are recoiling a bit at the reaction. I think you're seeing the pendulum swing a bit back away from that fuller engagement online, where a lot of times news organizations had been very much explicitly pressuring their folks to do so.
Well, and some like Glenn Thrush are seeing it as exhausting. And as he said, it hijacks your day, his day, when he gets these tweets. He's off. We'll continue to follow this. NPR media correspondent David Folkenflik, thanks as always.
Thank you.